Hey, welcome to the Hump Day Podcast. My name is Pastor Kevin, and it's hard to believe it is February 1st. We are 2 weeks away from Valentine's, which is crazy because I don't do much for Valentine's for Jennifer. Anyway, today I'm going to interview Ryan McDonald. Now, Ryan has been going to our church. How long have you been going to our church?
About, I guess, a year and a half.
Okay, and you guys came from the Rancho Cucamonga Church.
Yep, Cucamonga Christian Fellowship.
And you got married when?
We got married, oh gosh, June 27th, 2015.
Okay, good. It's just a little test. Okay, let's and how we met was your wife was part of the ordination process. We're going to be ordained. And you guys hooked up to Marie Christian Fellowship Church to complete her ordination process. And also, you moved here for what reason?
Before we got married, I lived in Hawthorne.
Okay.
Because my job is there. I work as an engineer.
Okay, and where do you work at?
At SpaceX.
See, to me, this is the ultimate job, SpaceX. Because
you love Tesla.
I love Tesla, and my personal savior, too, is Elon Musk. Which is probably wrong. And so you gave me and some other friends a tour of SpaceX, which I was totally fascinated with. So let's go back at the beginning, before we even met. I just want to set that up. Tell us when you received Christ. Tell me where you're from, what type of family you grew up in. Well, let's start from there.
Sure. I have two parents, so it's kind of obvious, but
mother and a father.
Yeah, we grew up in Holland, Michigan.
Okay.
And I have a younger brother as well. His name's David.
Okay.
And we moved around the Midwest. I was actually born in Toledo, Ohio, but we moved around the Midwest, and in second grade, we settled in Holland, and I grew up there for the rest of my life.
Okay, what did your dad do for a living, or what did he do?
My dad is he started off as a pharmaceutical sales rep, and now sells nutritional supplements.
Okay,
for a company called Thorne.
So would you say you had like a normal family? Just you and your brother, right?
Yeah, just me and my brother. And my mom actually was trained as a medical illustrator, so she would draw anatomy for textbooks that doctors would learn.
Are you serious?
Yeah, so she's really gifted as well. We always give my dad a hard time that we got our brains from her and not him. But yeah, we had a fairly normal growing up. My mom was able to work from home, so she'd work from home and took care of us when we were younger, and then was able to stay home later.
Okay.
So
you definitely had the typical loving American family.
Yeah, my parents have been awesome. They're still together despite going through some tough stuff. But,
oh, that's cool. Okay.
Yeah.
So then, did you grow up in church, going to church?
We did.
Okay.
We went to a Wesleyan church in Holland. And Holland is interesting. It was actually interviewed. There's this story done a couple years ago about how it was the second happiest place in the United States next to Hawaii. And they cited one of the reasons being that it's a town of maybe 100,000 people, so not too big. But there's over 180 churches or something in the area.
Oh,
so there's churches all over the place. But the one we went to was actually the mega church. It was about 200 or 2,500 people.
Okay. So I would assume that's when you received Christ in your life. You decided to follow Christ, or you were doing the church thing?
It was, I received Christ at a summer camp.
Okay.
And it was a wilderness camp, so we slept in the teepee and got eaten by bugs. And I guess I needed a savior at that time. But
how old were you?
I was in fourth grade.
Fourth grade.
So I can't do the math on how old I was.
I don't know.
Mexico 10,
either.
I guess. 9 or 10. But we grew up, and although we went to church, went to youth group, it was never really like a consistent theme of our family, I guess you would say, and not as much. So it kind of became something that you do, and it got kind of compartmentalized for me. Like the church stuff is over here, athletics are over here, school's over here.
Right, which most Christians are that way anyway. Yeah. They're totally compartmentalized. So you knew how to act in church, and then at school you act differently?
I was
or were you
very willing to please people. So I was very, I've always been very well behaved. I got straight A's through school.
Well, I was well behaved and I didn't get straight A's. So you did get your grades from your mom?
Yeah, from both of them.
So you go for, you graduated from high school, and then you decide, okay, what college did you go to?
Went to the University of Illinois.
Okay. And so when you were in college, did you have any kind of bent towards Christianity or your perspective of God, anything like that at the beginning of college?
Yeah, I was, I guess you can say, kind of a rarity in that my, actually didn't, I mean, Illinois is kind of notoriously a bit of a party school, and I was an athlete.
Okay.
I played football, I was on the varsity team there. And so I actually didn't have any alcohol until my second year there, which was like, kind of just like, didn't feel like that was the right thing to do.
Right.
I also wasn't 21 yet, and I started drinking before I was 21.
Right.
But I stayed in touch through our organization called Fellowship of Christian Athletes.
Okay. And the thing is, if you're listening to the podcast, Ryan is, compared to me, a giant, because you're 6 foot.
Four.
6'4", and I think you told me on our walk, you're 240.
Yeah, but I used to weigh 300 pounds when I played football.
Okay, and so...
And it was not fat.
Oh, that's crazy. See, well, I weighed 220, and that was all fat. And so, you were 300, and no fat.
I was a big guy.
And so, was this in college?
Yep.
Okay, college. So, okay, when you were in college football, which area... You know me, I don't know football, but I'm married to a football fanatic. And so, what position did you play in football?
I played center,
okay,
primarily. There was 1 year where I played tackle, but that was a little bit me being out of position.
Okay, and this was in college?
Yep.
So I would assume that you're 300 pounds, pure muscle, 6'4", years old, 6'4". And you're playing college for the university. University, college team doing pretty good?
We got a new coach my second year there.
Okay.
So we started from terrible. In our first 3 years, we won 7 combined games.
Oh, good.
And then my fourth year, we went to the Rose Bowl. We had a 9-3 season.
Did you really?
Yeah.
So you actually played at the Rose Bowl?
Yeah, in the Rose Bowl, we played USC.
You guys win?
No, we got, well, USC was the only professional team in Los Angeles at the time.
Okay.
There we go. There we go.
So the thing is, now what's going on with you is you're really focusing on sports. I assume that's your main focus?
That's certainly a primary focus.
Okay.
I actually got my scholarship offer to Illinois after I'd been accepted into the engineering.
Okay.
And I knew engineering was something I wanted to do. And if any of you out there are engineers or know engineers, then you know that college for engineers is usually a little different than most other people. It's a lot of time in the lab doing homework late at night. And so my time was very much consumed between playing football and doing engineering.
Okay. And so what year did you graduate from college then?
Graduated
yeah.
in 2008.
Okay.
In May, but then I had a fifth year because of the way football works. You
right.
get a year to practice without taking away from your eligibility. So I redshirted my like senior season on the field. I started a master's.
Okay, so tell me how this works, because you're playing college football, and do you have people that are recruiters that come to your university to watch you guys play?
Yeah, that happens somewhat. however, most... pretty much all colleges film all their games.
Okay.
So the colleges distribute their film to scouts, and the scouts watch game film. And if they really have an interest in somebody, they'll come in and scout them at practice. And that's
okay.
how.
And now, do they end up telling the coach that they're interested in a certain player and they're going to come out and watch it?
Yeah, usually that's.
And did the coach tell you that?
It depends.
Like, don't screw up on this game because you got to. someone watching you?
Well, that's the mentality for every game is don't screw up. But yeah, as far as if they come out to watch a practice, that's a little different. The coach would say, like, hey, you know.
So what I would like to know is the slow transition that you made from college to playing at the Rose Bowl to now moving into the pros. Mm-hmm. And how does that work?
After your last year of eligibility, then you, or some players, if they're good enough, will declare that they want to enter the draft before their eligibility is exhausted. But wasn't the case for me. Then you go through a process of, there's all sorts of film study from the NFL teams on the players, and they already have an idea just based off of like who's earned a name for themselves.
Right.
And they'll start selecting players, and you actually take an intelligence test, which is kind of funny. You go to, most people go to the NFL Combine, which is kind of like a meat market. They line all the people up and have them all run and see who's the fastest and lift as much weight as they can and all that stuff.
Right.
And I had a really, really good junior year of football, but my senior year was not that great, so I didn't get invited to the Combine.
Okay.
So I opted. A lot of players would go to special places to train for the Combine and get ready for the next season, and I opted. I tried one out, and I opted to stay in school and work another year towards my master's.
Okay. So did the NFL say, here you go, we want to offer you a position?
Yeah, so the way that works is there's a dedicated draft day, which is after the Combine. It's actually 2 days. It might be three now. But each team gets 7 picks per year, and the drafted players, obviously, the higher you're drafted, the more interest the team has in you, the more money that you're going to make, and usually the higher probability of you being a big name. I've been called by a couple teams in advance of the draft.
What teams were those?
The Dolphins called me beforehand. And then in the draft, the Seahawks called me and the Dolphins called me. And the Seahawks called me in the 6th round and said, hey, Ryan, we're really interested in you. I was like, oh, this is great. You have 3 picks left in the 7th was the way they worked out.
Right.
And they said, yeah, we're more interested as a free agent. And they gave me an offer. And it wasn't particularly a great offer. They'd already drafted perhaps the top center of our class.
Okay. So most likely.
Ahead of me. So most likely, I would have just like.
Sitting, standing there. You wouldn't be playing.
Yeah, or not even make the team.
Okay.
And so it was kind of cool. The second day of the draft was actually the day I got baptized, which is. Just worked out that way. I kind of
Let me stop there and open up this thing, because in the beginning of the conversation we were talking about that you were doing the church thing. So something happened in between college and going to the draft that you decided to make this commitment to Christ. What happened there?
It was a combination of things. One, and Robin doesn't necessarily like when I tell this story.
Robin is your wife.
He's my wife, yeah. But it's what happened. So I actually met a girl and dated her on campus, or was starting to, and one of the first times we hung out, I was explaining to her how, like, I've had this, like, comparison thing, like, my whole life, and kind of, like, a works-based attitude of, like, if I'm doing good enough stuff, then I'm blessed or whatever. And I was explaining to her how, I got really good grades and, I didn't drink as much as my teammates and I wasn't promiscuous or whatever.
Right.
And, thinking like, oh yeah, Ryan, like you're in a good spot. And we walked in the front door of my apartment at the time and she said, you know what? It's not relative. You either like love God or you don't.
Okay. And she just flat out said that.
Yeah, she said that. And it was kind of, talking to her later, it was kind of like this, it was like the spirit came on her and she just said something. And it literally was like, I walked into a wall.
Okay.
I was like, wow. And, you know, she left after that. That was, might have been like our first date or second date or something.
But okay, so she was pretty a hardcore Christian, or just...
Not even necessarily, it just was okay. The right word.
It was the right word or the right thing, okay.
And she like, didn't drink and do other stuff, and it kind of was like, wow, why don't, I really should probably examine my life. And she left, and I remember sitting on my couch, literally in, I don't know if trepidation is the right word, but I was very disturbed because I realized that everything I had done had been, like, a comparison of myself to other people, and rarely was it actually like engaging with God and finding out what he thought and trying to know him. And so that brought me to a place of like being super, super down on myself.
Well, no, that makes a lot of sense, because what happens where a lot of people are saying, I'm not as bad as them. Look at them.
Yeah.
I'm this.
You want to feel good about
it. So therefore I'm good.
And, I'm not like a sinner over here. I give my tithe and I do this and do that and the other.
Yeah. And so she just cut to the chase and said, you have to love God.
Yeah.
And that word just slam dunked you.
Yeah. And I mean, she definitely was used by God there.
Okay.
But.
But you, so, so you were so, dating her?
It was a first date or a second date. Okay. But, okay, so fast forward literally a week, it was like a strange time, but I went to a camp through Fellowship of Christian Athletes. It was like a summer retreat over a weekend down in Tennessee. And there was this moment where it was a bigger size auditorium that we were at on a college campus. And somebody was playing worship and stood up and I was singing, and I kind of like the theme of comparison kept coming up over and over again. And there was a point where they're like, well, what do you do that makes you a Christian? And I was like, man, sometimes I go to Fellowship of Christian Athletes, and that's all I could come up with.
Right.
And
so they asked that question.
That was in like a small group setting. But the guy from the podium said, he was just talking about something. He was like, yeah, I just want you to turn and pray for the person next to you. Mm-hmm. And I prayed for the person next to me, and it was like Acts 1:8 says that when you receive the Spirit, you'll be like clothed with power from on high. And it literally was like electricity running through my body, and this beautiful prayer that I never could have thought to string the words together came out. And not that I was speaking in tongues yet, but that was it was this moment where I'd been so low and felt like, man, everything I've tried to do has just screwed it up.
Mm-hmm.
And went to this place of God's like, but I'm here and I'm the one who does it. I do all the good things.
Right.
I use you. I work through you. And it just changed everything.
Okay.
I
was like, it was totally transformational for you.
Yeah. It was like, okay, this is real.
Okay.
This is not just some concept that we talk about anymore. Like, this is real. And
so
I need to do something with it.
Can you tell ever since that moment or then that your attitude and your behavior became more consistent with your following of Christ, or did it take time?
I would say that. It took time, but very quickly, like, I lost my desire to really, like, party or do anything like that. And I just realized that I'd never really wanted to do those things. They just were something that I did to kind of feel like I fit in with the group. And it suddenly became okay to be myself.
Right.
And not that I'm perfect at that, but we all struggle with trying to like manage our image in some way, shape, or form.
You know, it's one thing I struggle with is when people party, they get drunk, and it determines how good the party is when they don't remember it. It's almost to the point of, oh, the party, it was great. I don't remember a thing what happened. I was so drunk. And that was like, that's a world's way of, oh, that's an awesome party. And I just, when I was your age, a long time ago, I thought, my goodness, this doesn't make any sense to me. So then you were, when were you baptized?
Yeah, so that all happened in the summer of 2008.
Okay.
Summer, or April 2009 is when I got baptized. I got plugged into a church. It was a Vineyard. And one of my teammates' parents lived like in the same city as the campus, and they were the pastors of it. So I started going there, and it was super cool. And they were this really awesome blend of being spirit-filled, I guess, and also really practical with it. And I just found that. Wow, this is what I needed to learn.
And then all of a sudden the draft, you were drafted.
Yep, so draft day I was actually baptized.
So basically, in a sense, you're just going, oh my goodness, this is going well, in a sense.
Yeah, in a sense. My senior year of football was, like I said, kind of disappointing. Okay. So I got to draft day, and I'd kind of gotten the hint that there wasn't a very good probability of me being drafted.
Right.
And after the draft had ended and I didn't get picked, Seattle called me back and said, hey, you know, the offer is still on the table, and I didn't really have very much peace with it.
Okay.
And I said, yeah, I'm talking to a couple other teams, we'll figure it out. I wasn't. but my agent, like, advised me not to make a decision yet. So another half an hour goes by, not much is going on, and they call me again and say, listen, you got 5 minutes, we're moving on.
Okay, Seattle then.
Yep.
Okay.
And at that point, my parents were in town. I was driving to meet them to eat dinner. Mm-hmm. And I remember getting that call. I pulled over to the side of the road. I said, Lord, help. And San Diego called me within 5 seconds.
Seriously, so they said, you got 5 minutes to answer. You pull over. You start praying, and then your phone rings.
And it's the Chargers.
And now the Los Angeles Chargers. But down there, back then, it was the San Diego Chargers.
Yeah.
Okay.
And they offered me twice as much money, and they had a lot better roster situation.
Mm-hmm.
And my agent said, yeah, you should go for it.
So
within another 5 minutes, I decided to go down to San Diego.
So this is any young man's fantasy, I would assume, that I'm in the NFL.
Yeah.
And I'm a San Diego Charger. So then you moved to San Diego, or you just...
Yeah, shortly after the draft, they have what's called a mini camp.
Okay.
And mini camp is a compressed weekend of 5 practices in a weekend.
Okay.
And a whole bunch of film study, so you kind of get acquainted with the plays and all that stuff. And then you go back to finish school or graduate, and then you come back again for the summer. And in the summer, you have an off-season training program and also organized team activities or OTAs, which are just 16 practices spread across 4 weeks.
Okay, and is that during the summer?
That's during the summer. That's from late May to late July.
Okay.
Then you get a couple of weeks off before camp starts.
And then you start the preseason?
Then training camp starts in August.
Okay, let me ask you this. Your first NFL game, do you remember it? Where all of a sudden you're going out on the field. Pretty much you have the uniform. I don't even know. Do they call it uniform?
Yeah, they do.
Okay. Yeah, the uniform on, and then boom, you run out on the field. Is that a big thing, or to you, it's not?
It wasn't as much because it was the preseason, and I knew I wasn't going to play very much.
All right.
But the first full team practice where we were out there just practicing, I looked around, and I saw the people that were running on the field with me.
Right.
Like Darren Sproles was on the team at the time, and I was watching him run flares or screen passes and catch it, and I was like, there is no way I'm actually supposed to be on the field with these people.
Yeah.
Like, they're so fast.
Right.
And they're very, very professional. They know exactly what they're doing.
Okay.
There's very little hesitation in what's the right thing to do. It was kind of one of those things where you get to a place and you're like, okay, this is where I find out if I belong or if I don't.
Okay. So what was your first year playing with the San Diego Chargers?
My first year, I made the practice squad, which is, in the NFL, there are 43 people on the active roster.
Okay.
Or on that dress for games. There's 50, did I get that wrong? 45 that dress for games, 53 that are considered on the active roster. And there's an extra 8 players who are on the practice squad. So the 8 players on the practice squad don't get a full NFL salary, and they're they're on a weekly contract, basically, to help run the scout team or simulate the team that they're going to play.
Do the 53 people on rosters get paid?
Yeah, they get paid, like, at least rookie minimum or minimum salaries.
So, and not necessarily. So you were on the rookie part at the beginning.
I was on the practice squad, which meant I made the team, but I wasn't. Like, I was like halfway on the team. Yeah.
You were on the team.
I was definitely there.
Yeah.
And it was a great season. The team played very well. I was really glad to help out. But halfway through the season, I had a back surgery and that kind of.
Now, were you injured during the game?
It was kind of a cumulative effect of probably. I think I more than likely started to aggravate it during college.
Okay.
And particularly with lifting and maybe not having the greatest form and doing things the right way. And just by the time you get to the NFL, the compounding wear on a person's body is pretty significant.
Yeah, it's interesting because we assume, because we're watching football, it's after the NFL your body gets beaten up. But you're saying it's probably been beaten up pretty hard prior to the NFL, plus you get beaten up more, right?
Yeah, I think, and I can't say, like, for certain about any team, but in college, you do what the coach says.
Yeah.
Not that you don't do that in the NFL, but there's a bit, I think a lot of college teams probably push their players harder because you're just not as mature as a person.
Right,
you can't
right.
necessarily handle the freedom to decide how you're going to work out.
Yeah.
You need to have a program. And through that process, they kind of are able to weed out who is really committed and who is willing to put the work in and who isn't.
Yeah. And the ones that are really committed to put the work in, I would assume, are the ones that get injured the most. Because basically you're almost competing, aren't you, with each other?
Yeah.
To get ahead. So when the coach says, I need you back in there, and you're thinking in your head, I'm hurting right now, you just go in there.
Yeah.
And just do it. And just ignore the injury, I would assume.
Yeah.
Whether it's a head concussion or back injury.
Yeah, I don't believe I had any concussions, which is really. But the back thing did cause me a little bit of turmoil.
So
I think in the NFL, the players are just the biggest and the fastest and the strongest. And when I watch NFL games now, I sometimes cringe at how hard people hit each other. And I think, wow, I used to do that.
Yeah.
But it is a violent game. And I'm sure as you get older and you're beating yourself against even bigger, faster, stronger people,
right,
that the wear gets accelerated. But I do think through high school and college, it starts accumulating.
Right, right. Okay, so then with the back injury, were you eventually cut by the San Diego then?
They actually were good and invested in me. They thought I had potential, so they kept me on the practice squad, but just kind of on an injured reserve type thing. So I rehabbed with them the rest of that year and came back for training camp the following year.
Mm-hmm.
But I just didn't play as well.
Okay.
You kind of lose strength when you don't use your legs for several months recovering from a back surgery. And that was already one of the weaker parts of my game. And I started to question how I was mentally doing things because I wasn't able to do things as well physically, and then it just kind of spiraled, and I got cut after camp. So.
Okay. Now, how did that affect you? When football, you've been playing football in high school, college, and you're one of the few that actually get in the NFL, and then you're cut. Does that mess with your mind, or... Because what you were telling me that, you know, if you did this, you did this, you're going to get this. In the beginning of your relationship with God.
Mm-hmm.
So Were you just kicking yourself for not being better? What was going on in your head?
Man, there was a lot going on. I really, like, without the shadow of doubt, believe that it was God's design to have me go to San Diego.
Okay.
I met people out there that pushed me farther in my faith than I ever would have gone. And they were a pretty radical group of people that really, in a sense, just shunned the norms of society and all lived in a house in Ocean Beach and invited people that were homeless to stay with them when it was raining at night and like very radical, and it was very powerful, and God did a bunch of really cool things. But it kind of left me in this place of, like, on top of getting cut, there's like this wrestle of, am I pursuing something that is, like, just, you know, going to be eaten by moths and rust and destroyed versus doing something that's worthwhile? And so when I got cut, I really was trying to decide, is that what this is trying to say? Or then, you know, there's another camp of people that are like, God wants you to do awesome things.
Right.
And if you are blessed to do this, do it and use the platform. And so I kind of got stuck in this place back then. And I definitely cried when I got cut. I won't say I didn't have a plan for what was next in my life, but in that moment, it was
very hard.
What
you planned was done. It was...
Well, I never really planned to be in the NFL.
Right.
I wanted to get a scholarship and play in college, and the rest was bonus, but I got enough of a taste that I wanted more.
Well, I would assume, and I mean, you know...
It's a great lifestyle.
Playing football?
Yeah. Other than, like, the 6 months in the season are pretty demanding and grueling, but then you get 2 months off where you have no responsibilities other than staying in shape.
And I'm assuming that you'll make a lot more money than you would right after graduating from college at an intern job, right?
Yeah, I mean, it was...
Well, I know you would, like, multi-millions, but, you know, it's probably more than I'm getting now, you know, as a pastor. So that's cut done. So what I'm fascinated with is you were saying, look, I had that taste of materialism. I had that taste of intense work, then I'm off 2 months, you know. And now it's almost to the point, I think you were saying that, do I chase this, what the world tells me to chase, or do I chase what Jesus wants me to chase?
Yeah, and the question was also, like, is what I want to chase what Jesus wants me to chase to?
Yeah.
And what do I actually want to chase?
Right. No, that makes sense. So when you decided, okay, I'm not going to chase the materialism.
Well, I did want to. If I would have had another opportunity to play in the NFL, I would have definitely done it.
Yeah.
It was a strange season where the NFL lockout happened.
Mm-hmm.
So for whatever reason, I didn't get picked up by another team after I got cut. And then the following off season, I didn't get picked up by another team because nobody picked up any free agents because of the lockout, which normally that would have been, I'd get another fresh start at another team.
Did you try arena football?
Yeah, I ended up doing that after the second season that I wasn't, well, it was basically after the 2011 season. 2010 season had ended.
Okay.
Then the lockout happened, and then shortly thereafter, the arena football season started. So I decided to give that a shot.
Okay. And did that work?
It was not the NFL.
Okay. Yeah.
And I ended up being in a significant amount of pain again, and at the end of it, I was done.
So Ryan and I, every Wednesday morning with Robin, we go on our 6:30 a.m. walks. And so in a conversation on our walk, you were saying you were probably the closest to God and spiritually high in the San Diego group of that Bible study or Bible group of guys. And so this is where you were like growing the most. So what was going on then that was just, man, I had no fear of, because you would tell me you would invite people over and they would steal food or... I think your wife told me that. I don't think you told me.
They didn't steal. I mean, I guess there are people that stole food, but there are people that stole money, that stole computers, that stole a bunch of stuff.
That you would invite in your house.
Yeah.
So, I mean, most people wouldn't do that. You know, and so what was going on with you spiritually or with this group of people that were saying, hey, this is what Christ would do. Let's chase this. I mean, to go to materialism, playing football, and in the middle of that to say, you know what, it's my walk with the Lord is so important, and I'm going to be Christ-like in these particular areas.
Yeah, I really wanted to do both at the same time. Yeah. And I think you can. It just didn't work out for me. But what it was, I'd never been... Okay, so when I first moved to San Diego, the only people I knew were my next-door neighbors from Holland.
Okay.
Who went to Point Loma Nazarene.
Right.
And the one kid that I knew the best was a freshman when I was entering my rookie season.
Right.
And I actually went to his dorm for a Bible study one day.
Okay.
And I'd never seen young people my age, that were actually hungry to learn more.
Mm-hmm.
And I'd never really seen it be okay to actually want those things,
right.
I guess, is the best way to put it. And it started me thinking, man, I'd already become aware of the fact that I needed God, and it kind of was a group of people that were very intentionally seeking Him.
Okay.
And when groups of people just started gathering, and in their midst, God started doing things that were challenging to us and stretching to us, and we'd pray for people, and they would get healed, or somebody would make up a new song during worship.
Right.
And wow, this is really cool. And
then
we decided to start to pray. It's called a treasure hunt, where you pray and ask God for pictures of people or clues of people that you're going to meet. You decide you're going to go somewhere, and you kind of ask for a prophetic picture of what that person is going to look like and what their needs are, and then you try to find them in a mall or whatever and ask them to pray for it, or ask them if you can pray for them.
Well, that is quite interesting.
And
I mean, what
God
is called treasure hunt?
Yeah, it's called a treasure
hunt. Okay, so let me get this straight. You're sitting as a group, and you actually pray that you would get a vision of a particular person that you would eventually bump into, and that the Lord would give you an insight on what to tell that person, what to pray, in a sense, a prophetic word.
Yes.
Okay. That's interesting. I never knew that about you. So then you went to the mall as a group of people, and just walked around the mall.
Usually we find people.
Okay. So I never heard of that. That's fascinating. So, give me an example of one that you really remember, that you were walking down the mall, or the mall or something, if you knew, but it actually worked.
Yeah, there was, let me try to think back to a specific example. I don't want to just make something up.
Oh, no one will know if you're making it up.
Yeah, I know, but... Well, I can remember a time where we went to the name of the mall, but it was an outdoor mall in San Diego, and we were walking around, and it wasn't myself personally, but one of our friends had seen a woman sitting on a bench wearing a hat or something like that. And so we were walking, and there was a woman sitting on a bench wearing a hat. She's like, okay, well, I guess we'll see how this goes. And started talking to her. And sometimes you get a picture of just what the description is, and you don't really know what's going on. Right, sometimes you feel like it's a little more clear, like, this person has a broken leg, okay? But just through asking her what was going on, it was one of those moments where she had something terrible happen with one of her children.
Oh,
and,
wow.
Was in, I believe, was in the process of getting evicted or something crazy. And we were just really able to meet her. The whole point of the treasure hunt, it's really cool when you get things like received from God and give them to other people.
Right, right.
But the main goal is for you to go out and find somebody and be able to say, listen, I believe God like sent me to tell you that he sees you and that you're not alone in your struggles.
Right.
You're not alone
right.
in this, that, and the other thing. And that itself can be really powerful.
Yeah. Cause I think 5 years into my marriage, we were walking down the beach or in Venetian Beach, and Jennifer and I were walking down, and I stopped, and I go, oh my goodness, I said, hold on, and I looked at this lady, and she was sitting there quietly, and I told her, I think the Lord really wants me to pray for you, encourage you, that he hears you, and we prayed for her, and when we prayed for her, she started crying and gave us a hug. And when we left, that's all we did. When I left, Jennifer goes, I was feeling the same thing, but I didn't know what I was feeling. I didn't know how to respond to it. So you're right, the Lord has tendencies to use your arms, to use your feet, to use your mouth, to speak words of encouragement to somebody. And that's a gift, I would think.
It is, but, you know, God... we all move maybe more strongly in one gift than the other.
No,
and
I think
to all of us.
And the thing is, I would think that people, if they would use these gifts, or how you call it, the treasure hunt, how, because it's like, who doesn't need to know that the Lord is watching them in a way of, I'm here for you, I'm encouraging you, I love you, I care deeply for you. You know, I mean, that would be such an encouragement to anyone that's going through poop, you know, and stuff like that. So now you're moving in a totally new direction in ministry, you know, in your thinking. So tell us that how you met your wife.
Yeah. So after I played arena football, I was about to move back to Michigan because I didn't know what else to do.
Okay.
And, but my best, there's a whole another side story, but my best friend from high school came out to live with me when I played for the Chargers.
Mm-hmm.
And it was really through community with him and the two of us in the mornings deciding we're going to read the Bible together,
right.
We're going to pray together to start every day,
yeah.
And we'll just see what happens. And then I just believe there's so much power in authentic community.
Mm-hmm.
But so I kind of just, I was praying on the beach, reading my Bible in Michigan, and God just said, like, okay, do I go back to San Diego and drive my car back? What do I do? And he said, no, you need to be in San Diego. So I went back.
Okay.
And I still wasn't sure if I wanted to be done with football, so I started working at a grocery store and training for football after, so I'd go to work at 3 in the morning, work till 11, and
see,
then
you
do a 2-hour
workout. You were on the night crew?
It was the early morning crew.
Yeah, see, I worked at a grocery store. It was Alpha Bay. What grocery store did you work at?
I think it's defunct now, but Fresh and Easy.
Okay. Sounds like a deodorant spray. Okay, so you were Fresh and Easy. Okay, so I'm fascinated with the grocery store. So you were working at a grocery store.
Yep, and then eventually I decided, I did go to school and I have most of a master's, I should finish it.
Okay.
So there's a moment the next year, or before the next arena season, where the same team I played with called me up and said, hey, do you want to play again? And I was sitting on top of a mountain called Soledad Mountain. Again, I was just praying, and I really struggled with feeling like there were enough people that kind of in the, I guess you could say, in the spirit, tried to encourage me that football is what I should be doing. Mm-hmm. Like that was what God wanted me to do.
Yeah.
And I really struggled with feeling like I was letting God down by not doing it, but I just, it hurt, and I didn't want to do it anymore. Yeah. So I was up in the mountain.
So they were pushing you and saying it was God's will. Well, they were probably looking at you and say, dude, 305, 6'4".
How could this not be?
Yeah.
To this day, it still has been a bit of a wrestle. Okay. Did I give up on something because it got hard, or did I do,
right.
like, did I discern for myself what was the right thing to do? But in that, you know, I was praying and I just decided, you know what, I'm done with this.
Yeah.
And I had most of an engineering degree, so I started to go back to school, eventually got a job as an engineer, and one of my friends from California at Point Loma started working at the Cucamonga Christian Fellowship as a youth pastor. He met Robin through that because she started working there. Okay. And then he called me one day and said, hey, I know this girl that's...
So he wasn't interested, but he knew a girl.
Yeah, they were working together in ministry. And he'd been dating somebody for a while.
Okay.
But he basically said, I know this girl. She's... The way he described her was, she's 6 feet tall.
She played volleyball. Most women are not 6 feet tall.
No.
Okay, so she's 6 feet tall. You're 6'4". Okay.
Yeah. So I'm like, I always knew, like, I'm a big enough guy. I just don't want to feel like me sitting next to my wife has potential to break her.
Yeah.
So I was definitely like,
she comes to your hip, you know?
Yeah, so he's like, she's 6 feet tall.
Yeah.
She used to play volleyball. And we just had a campfire the other day. And she put 4 marshmallows on 1 skewer and said they were all for her. And for some reason, that was enough to make me think, you know what? I'm interested.
This is my girl. She gets
this is my kind.
I know 4 marshmallows. She's 6 feet tall and she plays, volleyball.
Yep. So that was enough to get me interested. And it was a...
So you drove out to rent a Cucamonga just to go to church?
I had another friend from Michigan that decided to drive a car out to San Diego.
Okay.
And we actually drove straight through from Holland and stopped at Rancho the day before New Year's. And that's when I met Robin the first time. Okay. But this was 3 to 4 months after the first time Cam told me about her.
Right.
I just was trying to figure out what was going on. And Robin has entirely abandoned hope in the situation, because he also told her about me, and
you were slow.
I'm incredibly slow moving.
I'm
an engineer.
you figured it out, calculating and all that stuff. But it's interesting during your dating, and that when you got engaged. I forgot the name. Unitarian.
Egalitarian.
Okay. So this is interesting that you decided that we're going to have an egalitarian marriage, right? I have never heard of an egalitarian. And so explain to me what is whatever it is.
Yeah.
Pronounce it again.
Egalitarian. Yeah, the concept that I guess is most often taught is that the man is the head of the family as Christ is the church.
Right.
And that's something that Paul says in Corinthians. But we, an egalitarian perspective says, and it's usually rooted from the Garden of Eden, where Adam and Eve were both together, and God said, both of you rule over creation.
Mm.
And it just never really sat with me that sat well with me that I inherently had more. more necessary, like, value or leadership ability than my wife just because I was a man.
Okay.
And so the concept is, if one looks like wife submits is the word that's always used, like, mm-hmm. wife submits to husband, husband submits to God, everybody's happy, the right. other is, like, wife and husband work together to both submit to God.
Right.
And so we really, I don't really believe I have the final say in our okay. decisions that we make as a couple.
More of a team
yeah.
approach, and that we do as a team, and not one's emotionally dominating the other,
mm-hmm.
or spiritually dominating, I'm assuming.
Yeah.
But we work together as one body
mm-hmm.
under God.
Yeah.
Okay.
So I've been introduced to it by a friend of mine before meeting Robin, but Robin also decided that's how she wanted marriage to be. And
right.
The whole concept is you both independently inquire of God of what
mm-hmm.
you should be doing,
mm-hmm.
and then confer with each other, and if they, if you agree, then that's probably what you should be doing,
right.
and if you disagree, then you
right.
should wait or keep praying until you figure out and come
right.
to an agreement. So,
and when were you married?
You asked me this already.
I forgot.
June
27th. Okay. No, I'm going to listen to the beginning of the podcast, see if we got the exact same date.
As long as it's not off by a couple of years.
So, I don't know. So what I've observed of your marriage, you have a really healthy marriage. I think it's a very balanced marriage, where you do with the team. And she talks about how much she adores you all the time and, like, just Google eyes at you. So how I want to wind this down is basically you went to the NFL. You grew up in the church, and then you were compartmentalizing, you know, your life. Then all of a sudden you had this aha moment with a girl on the first date that basically about loving God and stuff. You went to the draft, you got cut. And they had these incredible experiences in San Diego with hardcore spiritual. You meet Robin, it's just, you know, in a spiritual sense. And I noticed with you, you have a deep compassion for prayer. And that you love praying with people. No.
Yeah,
okay.
I'd say I do.
Okay. And
I really feel like I thrive in community. And I think one of the biggest things God wants to do in community is encourage each other.
Right.
Prayer is how.
Yeah, how you
do
it.
Yeah.
And you're very open and very honest. So if somebody was saying, man, I really need to take a step and really regain that passion for Christ. And I'm just kind of all over the place. What advice would you give somebody that just wants to be really close to God, but just doesn't know how?
I really think if you look at Jesus, he picked a small group of people
mm-hmm.
and walked with them in daily life.
Okay.
And I really believe if you want to grow, it might take some time to find the right person or group of people, but
right.
if you can find a close relationship
mm-hmm.
with somebody that is doing what you think is attractive to you, what it looks like to pursue God,
right.
then join them and become good friends with them. And
yeah.
in my opinion, I mean, I guess things get a little different when you're a family, but living with somebody, like living together
right.
with a person who is actively pursuing God and making a decision together to do that
mm-hmm.
is the most powerful thing you can do.
Right.
And I really think that that's what started changing things for me the most, and I'm really blessed to get to do that with Robin.
Well, that's cool.
Yeah.
All right. Well, thank you for joining us, and thank you for being part of this conversation.
Yeah, my pleasure.
Ryan and Robin are at our Saturday night service, so if you listen to this podcast and it meant anything to you, or meant something to you, join us on Saturday night at 6 o'clock on our service, or if you want to join us Sunday at 9 o'clock or 10:45 a.m. And join us next week for another great podcast as well. And remember, every day is a gift from God. He's a wise man. No questions. I'll see you soon. There you go. Are we going to buy it?
Yeah.
We'll redo it. It's only 10:15. 9:15.
Yeah.
So, okay.